Hey everyone, welcome back. Ever hit delete and wonder, like, does that really make it disappear?
Right.
Today we're going deep on something that's more important than you might think, the life cycle of data. From its creation to, well, maybe not complete destruction after all.
And what's fascinating is that it's way more than just ones and zeros, you know? It's about responsibility, the impact data has on all of us, even when we think it's long gone.
So let's unpack this whole data life cycle thing.
Yeah.
Our source lays out six main phases.
Okay.
Creation, storage, use, sharing, archiving, and then finally destruction. It's like a journey, right? With twists and turns along the way. We've got some pretty dense reports here to guide us, like why this even matters, who's involved, what you need to know.
And the key takeaway here is security can't be an afterthought. You know, it needs to be built into every single step of the way.
So it's not enough to just create and use data.
Right.
We have to think about how we store it, share it, keep it safe, eventually get rid of it responsibly.
Exactly. And here's where it gets really interesting. Imagine, like, a European citizen, right? Their data is stored on a U.S. server. EU law might require that data to be protected differently, you know?
Oh, wow.
Creating a very complex legal situation. This is where you get data sovereignty, a country's right to regulate data within its borders, even if it's from somewhere else.
So data location is a big deal. It's not just about finding space on a server. It's navigating this whole web of international laws.
Yeah, talk about a headache.
Huge headache.
Yeah, and that's just one piece of the puzzle. Before we get ahead of ourselves, let's step back to the beginning of the life cycle. Let's talk about the different players involved.
Right, because it's not like data just manages itself.
No.
Our report outlines some pretty important roles, like data owners, controllers, processors.
Yeah.
Sounds like a team effort.
It is.
But how do these roles actually play out in the real world?
Well, you can think of the data owner as like the parent of the data. They decide its purpose. The data controller acts like the guardian, setting the rules for how that data is used and protected. And then you have the data processor. They're like the babysitter who handles the data day to day, always following the guardian's instructions.
Okay, so using your analogy, if we're talking about something like a medical record.
Yeah.
The hospital would be the guardian, setting the rules, and like a company that manages their electronic records would be the babysitter.
Exactly.
Making sure everything's done by the book.
Precisely. And this is why understanding these roles is so important, especially for businesses, right? It's not just about knowing where your data is. It's knowing who has their hands on it, what they're doing with it. And this brings us to those legal consequences that we mentioned earlier, things like GDPR, which have huge implications for how data is handled.
So there's a whole chain of responsibility here.
There is.
And if one link breaks down, the whole thing falls apart. Yikes. This is starting to sound less like a data journey and more like a data obstacle course.
That's a great way to put it. And successfully navigating this course requires a clear understanding of each stage and the roles involved. So shall we move on to the first hurdle, data collection?
Let's do it. I am ready to tackle this course head on, one data hurdle at a time. So, data collection. It seems like every website wants to gather information about us these days. Is it really that big a deal how data is collected as long as it's being used for something useful?
Well, that's where things get a little tricky, right? While it's true that data collection can be used for good, you know, like improving services or understanding trends, it's super important to remember it's not a free-for-all.
You mean there are rules?
Oh, absolutely. It needs to be done ethically and responsibly. Remember those cookie consent pop-ups we see everywhere?
Yes.
Those exist because of regulations like GDPR, which emphasize transparency and user consent in data collection.
Okay, so it's not just about grabbing as much data as possible. It's about being transparent with users, making sure they're on board with how their data is being used. That makes sense.
Exactly. And once data is collected, the next hurdle is figuring out where it actually lives. This brings us to data location. And remember that whole data sovereignty thing we talked about?
Right.
Plays a huge role here.
Data sovereignty.
Right.
It's like data having its own passport, needing to follow the laws of the country it's visiting. But does it really have that big of an impact?
You bet. Let's say you're a business in the U.S. and you're storing customer data on servers in Europe. Even though you're based in the U.S., that data might be subject to European data protection laws, which can be stricter than U.S. laws.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So data location isn't just a technical decision. It's a strategic one with potential legal and financial implications for businesses.
Got it.
That is. Now, once the data is collected, it has a place to live. What happens next?
It's not like we just leave it there, right? You're right. It's not a set it and forget it kind of thing. It requires ongoing care and attention, which brings us to data maintenance.
Data maintenance.
Yeah.
So, like, digital spring cleaning. Deleting those ancient files we never look at.
That's part of it, but it's more than just deleting old files, right? Data maintenance is all about ensuring data accuracy and integrity over time. Imagine having a massive library with millions of books. You'd need a system to keep those books organized, ensure the information is accurate, up to date, repair any damaged books.
Right.
Data maintenance is essentially the same thing, but for the digital world.
Okay, so it's about keeping things tidy, making sure the information is reliable. So what does that actually look like in practice?
Oh, it involves things like data scrubbing.
Data scrubbing.
Yeah, which is like proofreading and correcting errors in a document. You're removing inconsistencies, duplicates to make sure the data is accurate. Then there are backups, which are like having spare copies of your most important documents just in case something happens to the originals.
Backups are a lifesaver. I learned that the hard way after a computer crash a few years ago. Lost a bunch of important files. Never again.
It's a lesson we all learn at some point. But the key takeaway here is that ongoing data maintenance is crucial for keeping data healthy and usable. It's an investment that pays off in the long run by minimizing errors, reducing security risks, and ensuring compliance with all those pesky regulations.
Makes sense.
No.
We put so much effort into creating and collecting data. It makes sense we need to take care of it properly.
Yeah.
Now, what about data retention? How long do we actually need to keep all this data around?
That's a great question. And that's where data retention policies come in. They help determine how long to keep data and when it's time to say goodbye.
So it's like deciding which books to keep on your bookshelf and which ones to donate.
Exactly. And just like with the bookshelf, there are different reasons for keeping things around. Sometimes it's because you need the information for business operations, legal reasons, or even historical preservation.
Right. Like all those tax documents we're supposed to keep for years.
Exactly. But here's the thing. Just because we can store massive amounts of data doesn't mean that we should.
That makes sense. But isn't more data always better?
Not necessarily. Over-retention, which is basically holding on to data longer than necessary, can actually increase costs and risks.
Really? How so?
Think about it. The more data you store, the more expensive it becomes. Especially in the cloud, you know, where you're paying for that storage space. But more importantly, the more data you have, the bigger the target you become for cyber attacks, data breaches. Plus, if you're holding on to data that you no longer need, it can create legal headaches if that data is subject to data privacy regulations.
So it's a balancing act.
Yeah.
Between needing to keep important information accessible, but also minimizing risk by getting rid of anything that's no longer necessary. Sounds tricky.
It definitely can be. And this is where having a clear data retention policy is crucial. It's about being strategic, making informed decisions about what to keep and what to delete.
Okay. So we've created our data, found it a home, kept it clean, organized, figured out how long to keep it around. What happens when we finally decide it's time to say goodbye? Is hitting delete really the end of the story? So when we hit that delete button, are we really saying goodbye to our data forever? Or are there like digital ghosts lurking in the machine?
That's the million-dollar question. And the answer is, well, a little unsettling. Remember that whole data remnants concept we touched on earlier?
Data remnants, right. It's like those faint images you sometimes see on old TV screens, even after you've changed the channel, lingering traces of what used to be there. But how can data stick around even after we've deleted it?
It all comes down to how data is stored, you see. Imagine writing something on a whiteboard and then erasing it. You might not see the writing anymore, but faint traces might still be visible if you look closely. Digital storage devices are kind of similar. Deleting a file doesn't actually erase it completely. It just removes the roadmap telling your computer where to find it.
So the data's still there. It's just kind of hiding in the background, waiting to be discovered. That's both fascinating and a little unnerving.
Exactly. And that's where data destruction comes in. It's not enough to just delete files, you know. We need to make sure that data is truly unrecoverable. Our source, the NIST SP-888-R1, it outlines three main methods for data sanitization. They use a cleaning analogy, which I think is helpful.
I'm all about a good analogy. Lay it on me.
Okay, so the first level is clearing, which is like a quick tidy up. You're essentially overwriting the data with new information, maybe even multiple times. It's like deleting a file and then saving a bunch of other random files over it. It might seem gone, but with the right tools, someone could potentially still recover it.
So not exactly the most secure method if we're dealing with really sensitive information. What about the next level up? Purging.
Purging is like taking a sledgehammer to your data. It involves techniques like degaussing, which is like using a super strong magnet to completely scramble the data on a hard drive, making it unreadable, or cryptographic erasure, which uses encryption to make the data inaccessible without a specific key, kind of like locking it in a safe and throwing away the key.
Wow, that's intense.
Yeah.
So purging is definitely a step up from clearing, but then there's that ultimate level, destroying. What does that entail?
Destroying is exactly what it sounds like. Complete and utter annihilation of the data storage device itself. We're talking physically shredding hard drives, incinerating tapes, disintegrating optical disks. It's the digital equivalent of making sure a secret message never sees the light of day again.
So no coming back from that. It sounds like something out of a spy movie.
Mm-hmm.
But seriously, knowing about these different methods is important, even for us regular folks, right?
Absolutely. Think about it. When you sell or give away an old phone or computer, you probably wipe it or do a factory reset, right?
Yeah.
But that might not be enough to completely erase your data. Someone with the right skills and tools could potentially still recover your personal information, photos, even passwords.
Okay, now I'm a little worried. So what can we do to protect ourselves? Do we really need to, like, physically destroy all our old devices?
Well, it's not always practical to smash our electronics to bits, but it is crucial to be aware of the risks and take appropriate precautions. For everyday use, a factory reset followed by overwriting the storage space with random data might be sufficient. There are programs specifically designed for this purpose.
So like giving our data a digital shredder before we send it off to the recycling bin.
Exactly. But for very sensitive information, like financial records or medical documents, you might want to consider more robust methods like purging or even physical destruction. It all depends on the level of security you need.
This has been an eye-opening journey through the world of data. We've gone from creation to storage, from maintenance to that inevitable moment when we have to say goodbye. It's clear that data management is not just about technology. It's about making responsible choices every step of the way.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
Data is a powerful tool, but it's up to us to use it wisely and protect it throughout its entire life cycle, even after we think it's gone for good.
Well said. So the next time you hit that delete button, remember that your data might not be gone for good. Take a moment to think about the journey it's been on and the responsibility we all share in managing it responsibly.
That's a great takeaway. And on that note, I think it's time for us to responsibly dispose of this conversation, at least for today.
I agree. Thanks for joining us for another deep dive. Until next time, stay curious.